heat wave.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. You know, we don't have any guests for the rest of the show. It's just you and I.
You're stuck with me.
I'm stuck with you. Or maybe we're stuck with some callers. If you don't want anyone wants to call in or text in and join the conversation, 844-967-2789. Easier to remember is 844-96-PARTY. Because I'm bringing back a topic that I would love people's thoughts on. Because I feel like in the era of more acceptance about climate change and more catastrophic tragedies that we see in our country, around the globe, whether it be droughts or floods or
fires,
where people stand on the carrot or the stick when it comes to how we all need to start changing our behavior with
making some adjustments.
Yeah. And you know, I think so much, because I was trying to think of anything in Wisconsin right now that rivals what's happening in Nevada. And maybe you'll know, or someone can let us know if they know. But so much, I feel like, has been, when it comes to changing behavior, has relied on tax incentives or guilt, or, you know, like carrying a water bottle instead of just buying plate, like, you know, like
right.
flats of bottled water. And but I saw this, and I don't think it's new, but I just saw it for the first time, realizing that Nevada has banned non-functional grass. And so we have a piece from CBS Sunday Morning talking about what's happening in Nevada when it comes to lawns.
In Las Vegas, Nevada, it's come to this. Around here, climate change has helped make water even more scarce. So under a new Nevada law, the grass has got to go.
When we look at outdoor water use in southern Nevada, landscaping far and away is the largest water user, and of that, it's grass.
The city's already pulled up about 4 million square feet of grass on public property so far this year, because thirsty green parkways are something they just can't afford anymore, says Bronson Mack of the Las Vegas Water Authority.
So this grass behind you is going.
The grass that you see behind me is not long for this world. In fact, within the next couple of months to a year, this grass will be completely eliminated, and it'll be replaced with drip irrigated trees and plants.
So I thought it was interesting, one, because when you were on the show before you were producer, we had a fun segment just talking about lawns and people who are obsessed with their lawns and how much water they take and how much upkeep they take and how they're terrible for the environment. And now, basically, Nevada has said, you can't,
no more
non-functional grass. And so they have this big mega drought. If you've been paying attention, I think more so, I don't know what's made bigger headlines this year when it comes to Lake Mead, which is the major water source for Nevada, specifically Las Vegas, is the fact that the water line keeps going down and down, or the fact that they keep finding bodies in Lake Mead that are like stuffed in a barrel from the 1970s that clearly have ties back to like the mob.
Oh, I'm sure that has nothing to do with the mob.
And so I think the headlines as far as the drought have been buttressed. Is that the right word?
Buttressed.
Buttressed. Thank you. With you know, true crime,
but like you said, think about how much that water level has gone down. If you look at some of the satellite pictures, it's really, really frightening.
And it's crazy. I mean, I've only ever been to Lake Mead once. This was circa 2008 on a houseboat trip with friends, because it was when I still lived. I was making my move from Los Angeles to Berkeley, and it was great. It was beautiful. It was an incredible area. And so I'm trying to think now, I'm trying to visualize 14 years ago how much lower the water is, and if they can even accommodate tourism like that anymore, where people just go out on their boats and hang out.
I don't know that that's even possible anymore. And again, looking long term, even over the next 10 years, you know, on the one hand, we have catastrophic flooding. On the other hand, we are having catastrophic droughts. Is that what's that area going to be hit with? Are they going to get enough rain to replenish this lake, which is crucial? It's just crucial to that area.
Well, and it just becomes more and more apparent that I feel like there's going to be swaths of the country. I mean, definitely the world, but as far as talking about, you know, some of the areas that have seen the largest population growth over the last 10 years. So we think Texas, Arizona, Florida. When do they become too hot to live in? Nevada probably being in there as well. Because we just, if we don't have the resources to make those places livable, because right now we, you know, you bring in water, you have air conditioning, which takes a lot of energy and things like that. And so it kind of brings me back, what stuck out to me about the law as far as non-functional grass is that, like, they have water waste investigators, also known as water cops, who are patrolling neighborhoods and taking note of who's watering when and how much water goes down the drain. And, like, I put this in the same, when I think about what we did during COVID and the public health officials of trying to enforce laws or mandates on people to protect other people, and the amount of violence, yes, but anger and the, you know, fights at grocery stores and stuff,
airplanes
of people, like, you're not going to impede on my freedom. And, like, I'm trying to imagine if this law was in Wisconsin,
you know, the diagonal mowers would never go along with this. They would have diagonal mowing competitions. I just don't think people who are that invested, for whatever reason, the sense of pride that they get, it's a setting for their home, you know, this big, beautiful, lush grass. I don't, and especially after COVID, I have less faith that we are willing to do things for the greater good.
Yeah, and, like, that's kind of where I saw this, and it was surprising, and I would love to hear more about the reactions of people living in Nevada, of if it's a situation where the drought is so bad and it's impacting so many things, so it's gotten to the tipping point of even people who normally might be, you know, upset about this law and try to say, well, you can't tell me what to do, are, since they're living through it, they're realizing, oh no, I understand.
Is that what it's going to take, though, that all of us have to be in dire, on the edge of the cliff circumstances before we're willing to take any actions? That's just so disappointing for us as a species.
I know. And that's, and it's, because I do wonder, because you think about what just got passed in the Inflation Reduction Act, which is large, you know, which is the biggest climate change bill that's we've passed ever, potentially. And so many of the things in there that they're all carrots, right? So, and, like, on for tax credits for, like, living clean. So it's if you, like, 10 to 30% for installing Energy Star products and stuff, of, like, refitting your home or refitting your business and your office, so that it's like solar electric and solar water heating and trying to change the building. So there's tax incentives to do that. There's tax incentives if you are earning less than $150,000 a year.
Which covers a fair amount of people.
Which covers a lot of us. Covers me. I'm assuming it covers you, unless you got unless you got a better negotiation than I did.
Well, we'll talk about that after the show.
For joint filers under $300,000, so you can get a tax credit for $7,500 for a clean EV vehicle.
Yeah.
And so these are all things largely that it feels like are trying to incentivize people to do their part,
do the right thing,
versus I can't even think of any laws in Wisconsin right now that are like a stick when it comes to climate change. I mean, we certainly,
there's nothing punitive, right?
I don't, and this
that
is
I
what
I think of offhand,
because I you know, I feel like we talk about PFAS a lot, mm-hmm, and I still don't think there's any laws really passed yet as far as how that's monitored, regulated, or limited. And I could, again, if you know of different laws on the books in Wisconsin.
Because we sure don't have water monitors like they do in Nevada.
No, and you know, we're not we're not a desert, right? Right. Like, we're in a different climate than Nevada.
But that's the case. That's in the case in California, too. Yeah. I think many communities in California have their water cups.
Well, as they should, right? Because, like, the way Los Angeles should not be as green as it is, right? Like, they steal water, basically, the development of that city was basically on the backs of a deal of being able to, like, steal water from elsewhere. And so you think, I mean, this goes back to the conversation about golf courses and what do we prioritize when you're in a low, you're in an area that water is more sparing. How do you get people to buy in that we need to limit, like, excessive use of it?
Well, again, unfortunately, in the day and age that we are, there will be people who say that a water shortage is a hoax.
Really?
Oh, sure. I would like not to believe that. But unfortunately, in what's happened since the beginning of COVID and the elections and all of those things, it seems to be an automatic comeback for something that you don't like is that, well, that's a hoax. That's not true.
Unless, so convenient.
Right? Unless it significantly impacts you personally.
But then sometimes I feel like not even then. Like, think about State Senator Andre Jacques, who literally was on the precipice of, like,
death. Like, with COVID.
With COVID. And I'm not sure he woke up, recovered, and would necessarily say he had a big about face, 180, come to Jesus, even though he did almost literally come to Jesus.
But I think that's who he gave credit to. For his recovery.
Because it's in God's hands.
Yes. Apparently.
Yes. So I don't know if anyone has insight on this or as far as how we will start to adjust when it comes to we need to start doing something. And everything I don't think is going to work with just tax incentives and trying to bribe people into making the changes that we need to make. But I also know that there's so much money involved. And because I was looking this up, and I think it was just this morning that it got published from The New Yorker. And it's looking into, like, how did something that should be so bipartisan, because we're seeing that climate change affects blue states, it affects
absolutely
red states. This is not something that is
partisan.
And yet we've seen it become so partisan in Congress, and at least what this article kind of points to is how much in the 2000s there were several bipartisan climate bills that were circulating the Senate, and then by 2010, which is when the Supreme Court had their Citizens United decision, in the last 12 years, how much that started to divert in that who was taking money. And, like, some of the Democrats who take a lot of fossil fuel money, Manchin, Sinema.
Absolutely.
And so it's at least kind of pointing to the fact that there are a lot of money. There's a lot of money still to be made on doing the things that are bad for the earth. And that was something that should be.
Sometimes I stare at.
Whoops.
Heat wave.
Yeah. We're living in it, kids.
I don't know if it's as simple as that, but it's certainly something to think about. So if you have thoughts on any of this, on carrot versus stick when it comes to altering our behavior in regards to climate change, why climate change became so partisan, let us know. We're here, 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. This is As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry, and we'll be back after the break.